Back in 2018, when Patty Shockner won a special election to fill the unexpired term of Republican Sheila Harsdorf, she became the first Democrat to hold the position of 10th District State Senator in 17 years. She's running for re-election this fall, and there are two Republicans who would like to end her streak of successful campaigns at one. Rob Stafschult and Cherie Link are both on the Republican ballot for the August 11th primary, and they join us here today to talk about their candidacies and their positions on the issues. It's a 10th Senate District Republican debate this morning on the West Side. Good morning. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and welcome to the West Side. For 30 years, it's been our tradition to hear from the legislative candidates in western Wisconsin, and that tradition continues today. Our guests are Cherie Link of Somerset. She's a small business owner. She also has a background in the glass industry and the travel industry. She's married, mother of two adult children, and has also been foster mom to 16 children. Cherie Link, welcome to the West Side.
Dean, thank you so much for having me.
Rob Stafschult of New Richmond is our other guest today. His business background includes food manufacturing, banking, real estate, and starting and running a waste disposal company. He's a fourth-generation farmer. He has a teenage daughter, and he's currently in his second term in the state legislature as the 29th Assembly Representative. Rob Stafschult, good to have you with us today.
Thanks for having us, Dean.
The 10th District contains most of Polk and St. Croix counties, as well as southwestern Burnett County, parts of central and western Dunn County, and a portion of northern Pierce County. The cities of Menominee, Hudson, River Falls, New Richmond, Amory, St. Croix Falls, and Glenwood City are all included in the district, as well as the villages of Baldwin, North Hudson, Somerset, Osceola, Hammond, Roberts, Grantsburg, Frederick, Luck, Boysville, and Balsam Lake. If you'd like to ask the candidates a question, you can do so in two ways. You can call 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. Catherine Thomas is on the other end of the line to take your call. Also, you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. So we've heard a little bit about the candidates, but let's learn more about both of them. Cherie Link, let's start with you. What inspired you to run?
Well, I am a small business owner here. I've got two locations, one in St. Croix County, one in Pierce County. Also grew up in a small business. My family owns Indian Head Glass, and I grew up in Polk County. So I have understood firsthand a lot of the challenges that businesses face and being a part of the community with our businesses. I work for Indian Head Glass still in a sales capacity. My district 10 is the same as my sales territory, so I've been very active in every corner of the district for the last 23 years. I really do understand, growing up in Polk, living in St. Croix, doing the sales piece, what the needs are. My clients have been sharing those with me for the last 23 years and what their clients need as well. So I am an outsider with fresh eyes. I saw a need, and I know that my life experience would give me the background needed to be a successful senator here in District 10.
Rob Stafschult, you've won both of your assembly races by double-digit margins. What's causing you to set that aside to pursue the Senate?
You know, I born and raised here, too, and, excuse me, Dean, just a farm kid that grew up, and I still farm with my dad, but I've had a lot of experience in small business and that background. But probably what motivated me more than anything is the fact that being a part of the state legislature the past two sessions, I've had a pretty unique view of the difference between having Sheila Harsdorf as our senator or Patty Shockner. And one of the things that I think is the most critical is the most very specific to your district things that you work on, and that just doesn't happen with Patty Shockner. And there used to be that if there was an issue in Emerald, Wisconsin, I'd call up Senator Harsdorf and say, hey, this is an issue, can we work on it, and send over what I was thinking, and she would edit it and make it better, and then we'd get to work on it, and that just doesn't happen anymore. So I'd like to fill that need and better serve the people of the 10th Senate District.
Again, the number for you to join the call, 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615, if you have a question for our candidates. So there are a number of top-of-mind issues that tie into the coronavirus pandemic, and we'll get to several of them. to me, the one that's got parents, teachers, administrators, and school boards throughout Western Wisconsin concerned is, what are we going to do about classes in the fall? Schools in Hudson, Amory, and Menominee in your district, as a matter of fact, expect to hold in-person classes in the fall with special safety measures in place. Others, like River Falls, are trying to prepare for either in-person, virtual, or hybrid classes, just waiting to see what the virus does before deciding. Rob Staff-Schultz, what can state government do, or what should state government's role be in providing guidance and helping these schools regarding fall reopening?
Well, first, let's talk about what they shouldn't do. What they shouldn't do is have a statewide blanket approach to this. And one of the things that I like the very most about the discussion we're about to have and that's been going on is with these different school districts, it's really the decisions are made by that local school district and their school board, and hopefully they take into account the teachers and the professionals that work in the building and their concerns. But they also meet with parents and talk to what the concerns are in their community, and they make those decisions on a local basis. So I think first and foremost, we need to keep those decisions local and what makes sense in those communities. From the state standpoint, what we can do, we give state support and ideas, and we have the federal dollars that have come in that Governor Evers has complete control over where some of the CARES Act funding goes. So hopefully we can weigh in on that and determine that some of those funds go to help our schools and make things stay safe.
Cherie Link, where are you on schools reopening in the fall?
I believe it is crucial that our kids' needs are first. While I've been out door knocking, I've talked to a number of educators as well that believe the same thing. I know Hudson put out a survey, and I believe it was a 70% resounding yes, get the kids back in school. The science and every study that's been done around the world indicates that this virus is not spreading in the schools. I'm urging my school district to look very seriously at it. I want local control. From a foster care perspective, oftentimes the first person to notice that there was something wrong was those teachers. Those kids are there 5 days a week, and they can easily see when there's a shift in what might be happening at home. So if there is a child that's in an abusive situation, in an addictive situation, they now have nobody advocating for them. Nobody knows that they might not have food at home, that they might not have a parent there to help support them, that they might not have food to eat tomorrow. So we need to get those kids back in a safe and healthy environment where they can be kids, where they can nurture those relationships, where they can have hands-on school. And I don't want a state senator from Milwaukee looking to make those decisions for us. There is certainly a mental health crisis occurring because these kids are not in school. And that's another piece that we need to be very watchful of.
We're listening to Cherie Link and Rob Staff-Schultz. They're candidates in the Republican primary for the 10th State Senate District, that primary occurring on August 11th. Again, you can join us at 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615, or send your question to ideas@wpr.org. Well, speaking of education, last month, Ray Cross, then the president of the University of Wisconsin system, asked the state legislature and Governor Tony Evers for a special session to consider special measures to help the UW system during the COVID-19 pandemic. Some of those special measures would have included extending a line of credit to the system and starting classes earlier in the fall than usual, among other measures. Cherie Link, your son graduated this year from UW River Falls. Your daughter is going to be a senior at UW Stout, both schools located in the 10th District. As a state senator, how would you approach the UW system generally and its requests for help from the legislature in response to COVID-19 specifically?
So there's a cultural difference between the schools in Madison and District 10. My daughter received an email about a month and a half ago that they were going to do a hybrid approach to the classes back in Stout this fall. And then just a week and a half ago, got the email that all 18 of her fall credits will be online. So that hybrid approach, not quite sure what that's going to look like, but certainly the schools are going through some challenges with those students not being on site. What is that going to look like for lack of parking income coming in, or are the kids going to be able to go back to the dorms? Or what is the funds going, that are going to be coming in? But we need to look at what endowment funds are available as they are challenged with what the school is going to look like next year. So I'm looking forward to hearing what Governor Tommy Thompson's ideas are to get the UW schools through this crisis. I'm going to be watching it closely. And as a first-time candidate, I can certainly bring a fresh set of eyes to the problem, especially since I have two kids that have been a part of this system for the last few years, and, of course, all of their friends as well. I would love to be on a committee that would help our universities and colleges. We also have two technical schools in our district as well. While my primary opponent missed 9 out of those 17 meetings, I would be present because it directly impacts me, and I'm absolutely opposed to raising tuition for these students.
Rob Staffschult, you're currently a member of the Assembly Committee on Colleges and Universities. What should the legislature be doing as it relates to the hardships being experienced by UW system schools right now?
Well, you know, Dean, I think, unfortunately, this is going to be a trying time for every avenue in the budget, and certainly four-year colleges and technical colleges are a part of that discussion. To have a special session just to highlight those and only deal with those issues, I think, was a little premature. I believe that we should have the discussions on, I mean, there's a lot of different programs and support systems that people are going to depend on in these communities besides those technical colleges and the four-year degrees, universities. So, we need to look at that, but I think we need to look at our state as a whole and figure out, you know, first of all, we need to get a handle on how much of a deficit are we going to have in our biennium budget. Numbers have come in anywhere from $850 million to $2 billion, and we're going to have to make some tough decisions. You know, the last couple of years being in the state legislature, being on the College and Universities Committee, I've established, and just being the state rep for the area, UW Stout is in my district. Have established a great relationship with former Chancellor Bob Meyer, who is now gone, and Doug Mell, who's still there, that does a lot of their relations information. Doug and I have developed a great relationship. We have each other's cell phones, so if things are going on, Doug calls me on my cell phone, and we get to work on things right away. I've also enjoyed, because it's relatively close, a good relationship with Dean Van Galen down in River Falls, and he is now leaving us as well. Seems like some of the best folks are taking off here, but we're going to have some great leadership in those two universities here in the 10th Senate District, and I look forward to continuing those relationships that I have and working on the things that matter to those two institutions. As Sheree pointed out, there's two technical colleges here. My mom was actually a teacher back in the day at WIT. It was WITI back then. It's WITC now. So I have a great relationship with WITC, and that's close to my heart because it was one of the last places my mom worked. So, we just need to continue forward, identify what the issues are that they are concerned with and the needs that they have, and then figure out the avenues and the best results for those.
Rob Staffschult is from New Richmond. He's one of the candidates for 10th Senate District on the Republican ticket on the August 11th primary. The other candidate is Sheree Link of Somerset. They're both with us this morning. What questions do you have for these candidates prior to the Republican primary next month? Call 800-228-5615 or email ideas@wpr.org. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the West Side. We're back with this debate between the two candidates running in the Republican primary for the 10th State Senate District. They are Sheree Link of Somerset and Rob Staffschult, of New Richmond. We do have earlier this month, Governor Evers announced the appointment of three retired judges who will review applicants to the People's Maps Commission. It's a nonpartisan redistricting commission charged with drawing fair, impartial legislative and congressional district maps following the 2020 census. We got an email from William and Frederick asking, would either of the candidates support moving Wisconsin to nonpartisan redistricting of congressional districts, or do they think the current districts are fairly drawn? Rob Staffschult, I'll give you first shot at that particular question. Is this commission that the governor has set up a step in the right direction?
Well, you know, it's easy to say a nonpartisan commission, but when it's set up by a partisan governor, and it wouldn't matter if it was Governor Evers or former Governor Walker or Tommy Thompson. There's just not nonpartisan. So to set up a commission and call it nonpartisan, I think, is pretty difficult to begin with. And I think, you know, this issue has been going on for a long time in politics, and when one side's in power, the other side says they gerrymander it, and when it flips the other way, then the other side says the other side's gerrymandering. And I think it's just one of those things that's unfortunate. We're growing a lot here in the western side of the 10th Senate District, so I expect our maps and our lines are going to change irregardless of who's drawing them, because we're going to have a higher population in River Falls, Hudson, North Hudson, and New Richmond that's going to draw the lines to the west. And honestly, I've looked at the maps in my assembly district, and if you're looking demographically, you pull it one way or the other, I'm still confident that I represent the people in the way that I would hope to still earn their vote. One of the people say, well, if we don't redraw them, that Democrats never have a chance to win. Well, Cherie and I are both running as Republicans in a primary to take out an incumbent Democrat, Patty Shockner. So if that were true, Patty Shockner would have never gotten into office. So I guess to answer your question, you know, I think the maps are what they are. It's been the law. It's always been the law that the legislature creates those maps, and I think we should continue to do that forward, no matter which side's in power.
The Republican-led legislature, which drew the current set of districts, has passed a number of election-related measures, many of which have drawn the ire of Democrats who say they're making it harder to vote. Cherie Link, what's the balance between voter access and election security, and also where do you stand on the redistricting?
So Rob and I are 100% in agreement on this one. Keeping the system the way we have it does keep the people in control. And if you saw every seat in our district as a Republican seat, that could be debated, but that certainly is not the case, as Rob pointed out. So I do believe that we need to keep the maps set up the way they are, keep our people in control. We can vote out if we don't agree with what that looks like once the redistricting is done. And we do have a lot of influx of people moving into the southern part of our district. So our district will change.
We're listening to the candidates in the 10th Senate District, Cherie Link and Rob Stafshult. Governor Evers this week ordered $250 million worth of lapses to the current fiscal year's state budget due to the economic slowdown caused by the coronavirus pandemic. Rob Stafshult, do you have a sense of where these one-time cuts should be coming from, or what programs should be protected from cuts?
I go back to the first question we talked about on the show, Dean, when we talk about doing a special session for colleges and universities. You know, if we start to earmark and pick winners and losers, I don't think that's the right approach. I think we should wait and get everything on the table, figure out exactly where we are and how much money we do have. I think trying to make some cuts here and there. One of the things that I was in favor of is we actually, and I'm pretty proud of this, the most bipartisan piece of legislation I've been a part of since I've been in office was the COVID-19 legislation that we did. Both sides of the aisle had other things that they would have liked to include in there. Democrats agreed to throw out some of their stuff that was just a line in the sand for Republicans. Republicans agreed not to take up things that they knew was just a line in the sand for Democrats. And it really should have been, you know, tens of bills to make all that happen. But we put it all into one because we knew the people needed it and we needed to have a reaction. So we passed that bill. But one of the things that was a little unfortunate that I would have preferred to see go in there was we were going to cap the automatic increases in salaries and increases in budgets and things of that nature. I think that would have been wise because it would have been unilaterally spread across. But I think to pick winners and losers right out of the gate saying, you know, we need to spend money on this but not this, that's a difficult task to do. And I hope that we don't have buyer's remorse down the road after we're done doing it.
If you're elected, you'll be considering the 2021 through 2023 biennial budget, and it's likely to be tight if revenues don't pick up. Cherie Link, where should the legislature look in order to balance the budget?
Well, throughout this pandemic, many families and small businesses were impacted, including mine. Of course, this is an estimate that the governor is putting out there. We need to make sure that we're not wasting a single dollar on government programs. While Governor Evers and Patty want to expand government, we have to make sure that we're protecting the taxpayers while we're looking forward to the future of our state. So I am able to bring an outsider business-minded perspective. With my business, I don't spend money I don't have. That's just economics 101. So the most important thing that I want my voters to understand is I will not raise taxes to balance this budget. Madison needs to be creative in looking at our programs and seeing where we have wasteful spending and reduce that.
800-228-5615 is the number for you to call if you'd like to join the conversation, 800-228-5615, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Speaking of small business, both of you have experience owning and operating small businesses here in Western Wisconsin. Sheree Link, from your experience, how would you work to improve the climate for small businesses in this part of the state?
So I just mentioned that we had to close our business while the big box stores were able to stay open during the pandemic. I belong to a number of chambers in our area and am also very active in a number of networking groups. So I have a firsthand connection to many business owners and managers. So one of the first things that we did is I organized a rally the early part of the pandemic. We were, I believe, first part of April with that. A friend of mine owns a number of the Fantastic Sams locally. We put a rally together in front of her Hudson location, and I was heartbroken hearing the story of her stylist that, you know, there's some that are single family parents and, you know, a couple kids at home. They could not get their unemployment check, and they had zero income coming in. And then the regulations that were put in place once they were able to open back up. So we need to really be evaluating the impact on our local businesses moving forward with any legislation or any shutdown that our governor wants to do.
Rob Staschult, many small businesses are getting hammered by the effects of the pandemic and the economic slowdown that has come with it. What can state government do in general, and what can the legislature do in particular for small businesses to help them survive COVID-19 beyond the steps that have been taken already that you mentioned earlier?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, Dean. I think one of the things that we need to look at, you know, this is an election, and Sheree and I and all other candidates always kind of have our three main talking points on what you want to do. However, this year I truly believe is a little bit different in the fact that we've got COVID-19 going on. It's kind of a special circumstance. So one of the very first things that I want to do and one of my talking points is we need to get our economy back up and rolling as close to what it was before as we can. I don't know if we'll get back to that spot. I hope we do, but that'll take some work. But we need to get our businesses open back up and get them rolling. But in order to keep our businesses rolling, we have to have people feeling comfortable going to businesses and being in the public. So, you know, we need to open businesses up, but we need to do it in a responsible, thoughtful manner that really takes into concern the safety of our seniors and our most vulnerable and make sure that we're doing it right. During, you know, being in office, I was part of a lot of Zoom meetings and caucus calls and all kinds of things for several months. They're almost daily we were having things. And I was a part of a group of people, mostly senators, a few state assembly folks, and some staff folks that kind of were working on putting together what would be a reopening plan. Now, ultimately, we ended up not utilizing that because the state Supreme Court made a decision to open things up, and so therefore it wasn't the kind of process that required a plan. But one of the things I liked most about the plan that we worked on was it was reactive. It gave a risk rating for your business, and it was based on what type of business you had, whether it was a lot of personal interaction or if you know, person-to-person touching, or if there was less of that, the risk rating would be less. But then it added to that a lot of dynamics. So it wasn't just a simple, it was kind of a convoluted risk rating, but it took into the population density of your county or your municipality. It took into account the number of positive cases or the number of deaths that we had in your area or your county. it took in a lot of those different things, whether it was rising or decreasing. It took a lot of those things in to build this risk factor. And then the most important part, I believe, about that and the things that we should be doing going forward is that it was reactive. So if things started going up and the risk factor rating started going higher, it wasn't just a one-time rating. It was a continuous examination into that risk factor. If the risk started going up, then we would pull some things back. And I think that's the responsible thing to do for our seniors and our most vulnerable, is to try to make sure that they stay protected. But we have to get those businesses up and going and get the economy rolling. But it doesn't work if people aren't safe and willing to go out and spend their hard-earned dollars at those businesses to keep our local economies going. So I think that's our top priority going into this next session.
You can join our conversation at 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615. Speaking of the pandemic, for the first few months, there was very little spread of COVID-19 here in western Wisconsin. That's changed in the last month, and now most of western Wisconsin and four of the five counties in your district are showing a high activity level. So, Rob Staffschult, how do you assess the state government's response to the coronavirus pandemic so far?
It's a learning curve. As far as the state's response shows, nobody liked the shutdown, including myself. I didn't think it was justified, but the people I talked to and my constituents that called my office, when it first started, they said, okay, well, we don't know much about this. This is new information. We don't know how big a deal it's going to be, so let's be safe. But then what we did after that was make a blanket statewide policy. And so St. Croix County and Burnett County and those businesses were closed because a lot of the numbers that were in Milwaukee or Madison, that's just not right. Our people up here are significantly different than Madison and Milwaukee, and they should be treated differently. So one of the things I think the state needs to do is throw out the statewide blanket approach that Governor Evers seems to constantly want to do, and realize that he's got a very diverse state. It's been pretty quiet from our senator. She hasn't said a whole lot about her district being different than Madison and Milwaukee, which kind of seems to be her trend. So I think that we need to first establish that there's different areas of the state that we can handle differently and go forward from there. I think that one of the things that we talk about is if you are an at-risk person and you know that and you're concerned about it, then make at-risk decisions for yourself. You're not required to go to a restaurant. If you want to go somewhere and you're feeling okay about doing that and you want to wear a mask, I think we're at the point now where nobody looks at anybody funny if they are wearing a mask. They're common. You go down the street, you see masks all over. I don't have a problem if somebody approaches me and they have a mask. I've been knocking on doors. Some people have masks, some people don't. It's what the individual person's comfort level is, knowing their own risk factors, and I think we need to keep that in mind as we go forward.
The Republican-led legislature successfully sued to end the Evers administration's Safer at Home order, has been referenced already. Sheree Link, in retrospect, was that the right decision?
Absolutely. So, the plan that Rob is discussing is that the Wisconsin Manufacturing and Commerce's plan, and it is reactive. We need to make sure that we're moving forward and being proactive for the future, because I believe that this is not a one-time situation. Just last night on my Link for Senate Facebook page, I released a controlled bureaucrat pandemic plan that would address this and any future pandemics. We can't have one person that has the ability to shut down our economy. All of these decisions need to be made in an open and very transparent area, and it needs to be justified by science. So I would encourage the listeners, go to my Facebook page and see what steps that I would be proposing for my very first legislative issue.
The western border of your district is shared with Minnesota. That state has issued a mask mandate in the last week in an effort to slow the spread of COVID-19. During this month's city council meeting in Amory, some business leaders spoke in favor of a citywide mask mandate there as a safety precaution against the spread of the coronavirus. Communities around the state have recently passed such mandates. Sheree Link, is it time for the state of Wisconsin to do the same?
My personal opinion is absolutely not. We made it through the first month of this crisis with very, very few people wearing masks. We were all still shopping in our grocery stores. We were all still shopping at Fleet Farm or Walmart or Menards. And even at that peak, we didn't see the spread just going crazy. And yes, we were supposed to be safer at home, but every time I went to the store, I was not the only one there. So I had mentioned, we own two retail stores, and we are right along the river. I will tell you, our sales increased quite a bit when Minnesota put the mask issue in place, because people are not wanting to wear these every minute of every day in every store that they go into. And it's going to impact Minnesota's economy by all of those people coming over here to shop. But it's having a positive impact on us. I agree with Rob. Everybody should have the choice in what that looks like. If you are comfortable wearing a mask, please, by all means, wear a mask. If you would prefer not to, that is also your choice. My stores are big enough. We can be 6 feet apart. Nobody's going to be close in your business. We have masks available for our employees there, but it should not be mandated. There are too many people that have issues breathing or asthma or whatever that may be anyway, and you're going to be having a negative impact on their health as well.
And Rob Staff-Schultz, based on what you said, I'm guessing you would also not favor a statewide mask mandate.
That's correct, Dean. I think one of the things to keep in mind, though, that Sheree mentioned is that people don't want to do that. However, we need to keep in consideration the health factor as well. And I'm kind of a science numbers kind of guy, a matter of fact guy. And Representative Gay Magnifici, who has endorsed me in this campaign, and we talk regularly, she's retired RN nurse after 35 years. And we've had long talks about the effectiveness of the masks. So I'm concerned that we're have this big discussion about masks without the science showing how effective those masks are. So that's one of my contributing factors to the fact that I'm not in favor of across-the-board mask mandates.
You're listening to a debate in the 10th State Senate District between the two Republican candidates who meet on the August 11th ballot. Rob Staff-Schultz, the voice you just heard, and Sheree Link are running for that office. What issues will bring you to the polls for the August primary or the November general election? If you'd like to know where these candidates stand, here's your chance. We've got a couple folks lined up on email, but you can email us at ideas@wpr.org or call 800-228-5615. And coming up, we'll talk about issues like mental health, gun control, and your questions as well. I'm Dean Kallenbach. This is The West Side on the Ideas Network. We're back with our debate in the 10th State Senate District between the two candidates running for the Republican primary on that ticket, hoping to make it to the ballot in the fall to face incumbent Democrat Patty Shockner. They are Rob Staff-Schultz of New Richmond and Sheree Link of Somerset. Let's go to the emails. One of our emailers, John from Wheeler, asks, what do the candidates think about climate change? And Rob Staff-Schultz, let's start with you.
You know, on a state level, that's an interesting topic, because a lot of what we see on climate change is a federal discussion. But I actually, one of my more significant critics when I was in office the last 3.5 years was a gentleman, and that's he's a one-issue voter. That's his concern. And I took some time last summer and went and talked to him. We went and met at a coffee house south of Menominee down by Downsville and chatted about some of the things that he can see that we should maybe be doing on a state level. A lot of that has to do with increased recycling, trying to reduce our carbon footprint. And those are kind of things that I think we can have those kind of conversations and go forward, but we need to make sure that there's buy-in from the public. I think sometimes, you know, currently one of my businesses my small business that I started is in the waste business, and we talk about recycling. There's a huge percentage of the population that I've seen firsthand that wants to recycle but doesn't really understand it. So I think to talk to the general public, there's a lot of education that could be done there on how to do things better. I think there's an abundance of people that want to do it right, but maybe think they know how and don't, or just don't have any idea at all of what they should be doing. So from a state level, you know, I don't know how many taxpayer dollars we'd have to spend on it after our current situation with COVID and a tight budget. But I think getting out the right way to do things is a campaign that we could work on a state level.
Sheree Link, what do you have to say about climate change and what you would, how you would prioritize that as a state senator?
Well, I believe it's dramatically more important at a federal level, but we need to ensure that we are not destroying our economy with a radical plan like AOC's Green New Deal. We have to be logical about what we're doing.
All right. Another email from Cedric in Balsam Lake asking if there was a coronavirus vaccine, would the candidates support a mandate for that? Sheree Link will give you first shot at that question.
So I have a bit of a personal story to go with this. I am the only candidate that is fully endorsed by Pro-Life Wisconsin and Wisconsin Right to Life. And I've been living out those values my entire life. I have been a foster care provider for 10 years to provide a home for the in-between, right? Womb to tomb is where I stand on my pro-life values. But in addition to that, I was blessed to be healthy enough to donate a kidney last year. And so when somebody starts talking about a mandatory vaccine, I, due to having one kidney, cannot take ibuprofen. There are some health supplements, different things that I can't put in my body. So now you want to have a mandatory vaccine that I'm going to be required to take. What is that going to do to my one kidney? I am opposed, and I believe that we should all have a right to look at what vaccines we are comfortable getting and what that looks like for us and for our families.
Rob Saffschultz, your turn on the mandatory vaccine question.
Yeah, I'm against mandatory vaccines. Again, I think there are great medical reasons for having some of those, but I think mandatory is in a different league. I think that people should have the choice to do that and run their families and their children the way they see fit. I just believe that choices about children should be made by their parents, grandparents, and their family.
Both of you list mental health as an important issue the next legislature will be facing. Rob Staffschult, what do you see are the pressing needs in that area, and what should the state be doing that it isn't doing now?
Dean, I tell you, we could do a whole hour show just on this topic. It's one of the first things I started to work on after I got elected in 2016 and took office in 2017, and admittedly has been one of the most frustrating topics I've worked on. You know, I've done a bill as an author for financial literacy for kids, veterans, suicide task force. I've done all of that. But the one topic that we keep coming back to that we try to make little cuts here and there, but for the most part, they're very tiny steps forward. And I'm thankful that we see tiny steps forward. But I was part of the suicide task force put together by the speaker. And also the adoption task force, which also dealt with some mental health issues when we're talking about children being placed out of their homes. But I think, you know, I passed a bill through the state assembly for a pilot program for northwestern Wisconsin. I included 7 counties. And it's just ludicrous to me the way we treat someone right now that's in an emergency detention mental health risk situation, something we call a Chapter 51. It involves law enforcement. Those people are probably in the worst mental state of their life, or likely one of the worst. And if that happens and they get put in police custody because someone thinks they're going to hurt themselves or others, what happens is we process them at a hospital somewhere here to make sure that they are physically fit to travel. But then mentally, we put them in handcuffs in the back of a squad car, and we ship them all the way across, most times, all the way across the state of Wisconsin to the Winnebago State Mental Health Facility. That doesn't do them any good to be in handcuffs for 5 hours. You have to stop for restroom breaks at jails or certain identified places. It's just horrible. Now, add to the top of that, not only is it not the right care for those patients and for those people, it takes them outside of their circle of support network with their family or their friends, maybe doctors they've been seeing already to address mental health issues. It puts them 5 hours across the state, and then we have sheriff's department that's got 2 officers that are taken out for 10 hours by the time they make the round trip at a minimum. And then they have an initial court appearance, so a day or two later, we drive back over there and pick them up and then haul them back across the state again. And then if the judge deems that, yeah, in fact, we think that you should spend some time there, we haul them back across the state the third time and drop them off. And then one of the most ludicrous things about this statute is that we're not required to go pick them back up. So then we leave them over there. It's just horrible. It's something I've been working on since we started. And I got this pilot program. I've spent a ton of time talking to the hospitals in our area. We used to have a facility in Cumberland. I went up there and talked to the gentleman that runs that for a whole day. And basically the reason that we don't have access to Chapter 51 detention rooms and beds in our area is because they lose a ton of money. So I put together a pilot program that would subsidize the deficit between the reimbursement rate through all different channels of reimbursement and the actual cost of care. And it's, you know, it's kind of a convoluted, it would take a little while to explain it all, but in a nutshell, it costs X amount of dollars to care for that patient per day. The reimbursement rate is something less than that, and the state would subsidize the difference. And that would allow those people to maybe have hospitals in this area that would create those kind of beds, and we'd have access here. And I got it through the assembly. It's hung up in the Senate, I think, waiting for them to come back, and they got held up on COVID. But that's where we're at. That's probably the biggest advancement I've seen in mental health on this area on the Chapter 51 scale. Now, add to that, there's a facility in Eau Claire that has those kind of beds, but they're almost always 100% filled. So our patients from Polk, Barron, Burnett, St. Croix, all of our patients that need the access to that kind of service drive right past Eau Claire heading to Winnebago. So in this past budget, we put $15 million in the budget to renovate that facility. So even though it's 70 miles from Hudson, it's not 5 hours away. It's a little over an hour away, and maybe family can go down and meet with them after work or, you know, get the support they need. And one of the things that I think is also concerning is sometimes we see a rate of people that go back for a second or a third or a fourth time. And I think if we are closer when we are discharged to our current doctors, or you can go back for follow-up appointments, I really think that that's better for the patients as well. It's just killing our county board budgets as well and our law enforcement budgets. So I've worked with lots of chiefs of police, you know, the county sheriff. So I've worked with all those people to put this plan together. I'd really like to see it try. And like I say, it's a pilot. So one of the things with government programs is sometimes they launch, and if they don't work, we can never seem to get rid of them. So I put in there an effective end date so that if it's not working, we can stop doing that and try something else. I think that's a fiscal responsible thing to do. But if it is working, maybe we can expand it. And I know as a fiscal conservative Republican running for the Senate seat, people question why I would subsidize and use taxpayer dollars for that program. And the reason is because the overall cost to the taxpayers, if you add up the budgets for the sheriff's department and the mental health folks and going across the state, the total taxpayer responsibility would hopefully be decreased, and that's what we'd have to measure. So it's a huge topic. Like I say, I could go on forever about mental health and the things we're trying to do in that arena, but it's definitely something we need to work on.
Sheree Link, in your campaign materials, you pledged to find solutions to the drug and mental health issues that are growing in western Wisconsin. In your mind, what do those solutions look like?
Well, first of all, Patty Shockner voted no on that budget that would bring the 22 beds to Eau Claire. This is very personal to me. As a foster care provider, I understand firsthand what those resources are and the resources that we are expanding and that are not efficient, that are not effective, and that are too far away, and the impact that that has on those families. Those families lived with me. Before COVID hit, I did a ride-along with the New Richmond Police Department, and we experienced a gentleman who was in crisis. We were at the hospital for a good part of that time frame of the ride-along as we were trying to evaluate and do the teleconference evaluation for him and what his needs would be, and did he need to go to Winnebago? What would that look like? So we have to have more efficient resources close by, and I would look forward to being a part of that solution. Being on a task force is a great thing. You know, you're showing up to those committee meetings, but for me, it's personal. I was one of those people speaking up at those task force meetings because I understood firsthand what it looked like.
We're getting tight on time, and I did promise that we'd talk about guns and gun control legislation. Last fall, Governor Evers called a special session of the legislature to take up two gun control measures. Rather than vote on the legislation, the Republican leadership gaveled in, then adjourned the sessions in under a minute. Rob Staschult, if you're elected, where would you be willing to go as far as gun control legislation is concerned? And if you could keep your answer to about 30 seconds, that'd be helpful.
Well, Dean, obviously I'm the endorsed candidate in this race by the NRA, so that speaks a lot. I've been a lifelong sportsman, hunter, fisher, trapperman. Guns in my family is just kind of the way we was part of our family traditions and the things that we pass on to our kids, and it gives us the right to protect our homes. I think Governor Evers was maybe again looking in the silo to Milwaukee and Madison and their problems and trying to push them forward onto the good people in northwestern Wisconsin that really don't want that.
Cherie Link, same question. Should the legislature be taking any steps in an effort to reduce or limit gun violence?
I'm a staunch defender of our Second Amendment rights. It is about personal protection. The Democrats are trying to take away our rights, defund our police. I also got the highest rating that the NRA gives for a candidate. So I am an AQ NRA supporter and will do everything I can to ensure that we maintain our Second Amendment rights.
Getting very tight on time. As you're both Republicans, we've heard a lot of agreement from the two of you on the issues we've talked about today. So, Cherie Link, in 15 seconds, what sets you apart from Rob Staschult that should inform voters to mark your name on the ballot August 11th?
I'm the candidate that can win in November. Sheila Horsdorf held the seat for a very long time. We lost it in a special election. I'm out campaigning every day. I understand our communities because I've been in them for my entire life, north to south, east to west. I've lived my conservative principles by being committed to making a difference long before I ran for Senate. I've known Patty for a long time, and I feared that she would be voting to benefit Madison. I was in a position to get involved and make a difference and represent our communities.
Rob Staschult, make your case. Why should you get the votes of the people in the 10th Senate District?
Yeah, I was born and raised here, too. Grew up on a farm. I run a small business. I have a really good pulse on what people in our area think. Spent a large amount of my time in the 30th Assembly District. I've got two terms in representing the 29th Assembly District. And my family used to recreate up in the 28th a lot, so I'm very familiar with that, too, and have friends throughout the whole thing. So I keep a good pulse on what's going on. And I've got the experience, and I've developed the relationships in Madison to really work and get things done for the people of the 10th Senate District in Madison.
Rob Staschult and Cherie Link, thank you for joining us today. We appreciate your being with us.
Thanks, Dean. Thanks so much for having us on.
The primary election is August 11th. They're running for the 10th State Senate District. Rob Staschult of New Richmond, Cherie Link of Somerset. Catherine Thomas produced today's program. Kate Spranger manages our web presence and our archives. I'm Dean Kallenbach. You've been listening to The West Side on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.